welcome to Tune to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from the Golden Age of Radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, for an hour of detective drama and some unlikely shows for the genre, though a lot of detection going on. Later on, we'll hear yours truly, Johnny Deller, insurance investigator. Right now, it's This Is Your FBI, a show personally approved by FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover. Maybe no wonder, as a special message from him is embedded in this next episode called Old Mother Larceny from May 25th, 1951.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society presents This Is Your FBI. This Is Your FBI, the official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Presented, transcribed as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community. Later in the program, we will bring you an important message from Mr. J. Edgar Hoover on our nation's internal security. From time to time in their 30s and early 40s, most men and women ask themselves,
what will I be doing when I'm 65 years old? What are my chances of being 100% self-supporting when it's time to stop work?
Well, that's largely up to you and the decision you make right now. One such opportunity for an important decision will be offered to you in our middle commercial. It tells about the Equitable Society's Independent 60s plan. This plan means exactly what it says. Financial independence for you in your 60s. Do you like that idea? Then please listen carefully to this important message from the Equitable Society coming in about 14 minutes. Tonight, the subject of our FBI file, robbery. It's titled, Old Mother Larceny.
What kind of homes do criminals come from? That's a question frequently asked of members of the FBI. The average person usually visualizes a dark, crowded tenement in the slum area of a large city as the typical breeding ground of delinquency. Actually, of course, in millions of such homes, conscientious parents who really put their hearts into their job overcome the handicaps of poverty and bad environment. Their children grow up to be successful men and women and good citizens. The truth is that criminal homes are found in good neighborhoods as well as bad, in city and country and small towns. Almost always, the common denominator is a parent who, for one reason or another, cannot measure up to the responsibilities of parenthood. In tonight's case from the official files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, you will meet such a parent and two sons who are the inevitable products of the kind of upbringing they received. Tonight's FBI file opens on a river running past a large Midwestern city. It is late evening as a small boat drifts aimlessly toward a barge loaded with freight cars. In the rear of the small boat, a man lies motionless. In the prow stands a tall, heavy-set man. As he sees a figure move on the barge, he lifts his head and yells,
"Fresh fish! Fresh fish! Mister, you want good fresh fish?
Well,
go away. Maybe your friends buy some.
Nobody up here but me.
Then you buy. We gotta get money for more wine. Buy one, mister. 10 cents.
No.
A nickel.
No.
Don't you like fish?
I don't want any.
I'll make you a present. You take a fish free for nothing. You be my friend.
Will you get out of here if I do?
Sure, sure. We get wine money someplace else. How about a fish like this?
That's fine.
Swell, mister. You take it. Okay, Danny. Come on board. Let's get to work.
Meanwhile, in the same city, in the basement of a large office building, an FBI agent is practicing at an indoor pistol range. He is firing his last rounds as Agent Jim Taylor approaches.
Fire! Harry, can I see you a minute?
Yeah, sure, Jim.
I just got a call. They want us upstairs.
Oh?
They tell me you're handling Becker's cases while he's out.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, we might be getting a lead on those stolen watches.
No, I haven't hit that file yet.
Go ahead, Lane.
Yeah, thanks. Can you fill me in?
Yeah. About 6 months ago, two men knocked out the watchman at the freight yard, broke the seal on a car from New York, and stole almost 300 wristwatches.
Quite a haul.
Yeah, about $6,000 worth. Oh, this is the only elevator running tonight.
Yeah.
The only description we got was that one of the men was tall and heavy set. It all happened at night, and the watchman never did get a good look at them.
And you say we may be getting a lead?
Yeah. We had the list of serial numbers inside the watch cases, and it just paid off.
Oh, how?
Well, a soldier in Korea returned one of the stolen watches to the factory to be repaired.
Uh-huh.
The Army sent a cable for us and found out the watch was bought at a local store.
Which one?
A little place on Broadway, Calhoun's Jewelry Shop.
Is he a fence?
No, I went to see him. He's giving us full cooperation.
Mm. Well, can he help?
Yeah, he remembered buying the watches from an itinerant salesman. Gave him the name he used and a good description. I sent them both along to Washington. Go ahead, Inler.
Yeah, thanks.
16, please.
Does Calhoun have any idea what the salesman's name was?
No, but he promised to come by the office tonight, go through our file of pictures. That was this afternoon.
Uh-huh.
Well, and he called a couple of minutes ago to report the salesman came back to the store.
Tonight?
Yeah. Wanted to sell Calhoun binoculars this time. And instead of stalling, Calhoun accused him of selling stolen watches, said he was taking him to the police. Well, the mention of that, the salesman ran.
He get away?
Yeah.
You say Calhoun's coming to the office?
Yeah, he's on his way now, so let's lay out those pictures.
Just a minute. Coming.
Hello, Mrs. Berrien.
Mr. Martin, come in, come in.
Thank you. Yeah. Where are the dead end kids?
Not home yet. Come on out into the kitchen. I'm cooking something special for them.
Mm. Al told me Danny and him were getting some binoculars tonight. How'd they make out?
Oh, I don't know. They never bother me with business. Meatballs and fried onions.
Ah, wonderful. How soon will they be back?
Well, who knows about them? If you could tell where they'll be the next minute, would they be my babies?
Babies? You couldn't hide them in Grand Canyon.
Why don't you wait and eat with them?
No, thanks. I can't. I got to meet my girl. You don't know when they'll be back, huh?
Uh-uh. No.
Well, I got to see them and get those binoculars the first thing in the morning.
Why so fast? Last time, with the watches, you said it was better to leave them for a little while.
Well, that was different.
Mr. Martin, you're not in some trouble.
Me? Say, you want to know how lucky I am? I win crooked raffles.
Oh, you're like my boys. Always fun comes first. Say, you know what they did to me last night?
No.
Well... when I sleep, the building could fall down.
Yeah.
So last night, they come in my room and carry me on my mattress out to the kitchen. Then they made me get up and cook them a whole meal in the middle of the night.
Mrs. Berrien, I'd like to stick around and hear how you locked each other in the gas chamber, but I can't see... So tell Al to call me when he gets back.
Man from the jewelry store was here, Larry.
Yeah, when?
While you were in with the SAC, he went through our pictures, no luck.
Anything else we can do tonight?
Nothing I can think.
Oh, will you take that, Jim?
Yeah. Taylor speaking. Yes, Captain. When? Any descriptions? What'd they get? Yes. Yes, right away. Thanks for calling. Larry, it was Captain Jones, First Precinct. Another interstate freight car was broken into tonight.
No?
This one was on a barge. Two men did the job, got three crates of binoculars.
That's what the salesman offered Calhoun.
Uh-huh. And the M.O. used tonight was the same as on the wristwatch theft.
Did they leave any evidence this time?
Well, the railroad police are waiting for us to inspect. Larry, will you run up to Pier 11? I'll cover the hospital.
Yeah. Hospital?
Well, the watchman passed out after reporting the robbery. He's at emergency ward now. I'll wait to see him and try to get some dope on the two thieves.
We did it, Ma.
Put me down. Oh, I couldn't breathe.
What do you have to breathe for?
3 capes of binoculars. Pretty good, eh?
Hey, what's that I smell?
Meatballs and fried onions.
Well, come on, let's get at them.
Timber!
You booby trapped me.
All right, now get up. We'll go eat.
Come on. Oh, brother, am I hungry.
Well, sit down. It's ready.
Oh, boy.
Hey, looks good, Ma.
I tried to give some to your friend, Mr. Martin.
Oh, is he here?
Oh, didn't I tell you?
Nah.
I guess all the excitement had made me forget. He wants you to call him.
First we'll leave.
I don't understand, Mr. Martin. Last time he said you should hold the watches. Tonight he wanted the glasses right away.
What, to sell them?
Yeah, he wants them tomorrow morning.
Oh, that's funny. Why should you want them so quick?
I don't know. Maybe we should find out.
Yeah. Oh, Al, you forgot.
Huh?
Ma's present.
Ah.
What, you brought me something?
Yeah. Go get it.
Yeah, sure.
What is it?
We picked out the best pair of binoculars for you.
What do I need with them?
You'll be able to see in the windows on the next block.
Well, I don't know anybody there.
Well, you didn't know the people across the street when you started looking in their place.
But who can see to the next block?
With these glasses, it'll be like you're in the same room. Here, Ma, here. Take a look, huh?
All right. Oh. Ma, it's wonderful.
Okay, Ma. Put them down. You'll wear them out.
We put black polish inside the glass.
Did Washington send anything yet?
Yeah, Larry, that ident just came through.
Oh, who is it?
Somebody named Eric Martin. His pictures are on the way.
How come we didn't have one?
No local arrest record.
Oh.
He's from back east originally. Been convicted 4 times on confidence charges, 2 for handling stolen goods.
Well, sounds like the right man.
I've sent out a warrant on him. I wish we could get something on those other two.
I got 0 at the Bard.
Huh?
Not a single print, inside or outside the freight car.
Well, that about matches what the watchman contributed.
Couldn't he give you any description?
Well, nothing we don't know. The one who did the slugging was big and heavy set.
So all we got to work on is the ident on Eric Martin.
Yeah, but that might be enough. If we can find him, Larry, we might come up with a whole trio.
Respect for a king-size hangover, huh? Oh, those crates in the truck, is that the merchandise?
Uh-huh.
Well, let's have the keys.
Keys to what?
The truck. I got to deliver that stuff this morning.
Where's all the big jokes today?
In those bottles I emptied last night. Now, let's have the keys and I'll get started.
Wait a minute. Al wants to talk to you. Al? Al?
Yeah?
Eric is here.
Ah. Hello, Eric.
You don't feel so good today.
Huh? What's the matter? Look, I came here to get some binoculars, not to have a physical exam.
He wants to take the truck and deliver the binocs to some guy.
Who's the guy? Did I ask you where you stole them? Come on. I'm in a hurry. Before you go, we ought to have a drink. Well, that I can use.
All right, I'll go get the bottle.
Did you get those lugs off?
Oh, no.
I'll get them. I went by your hotel this morning to see you, Eric.
Oh?
They said you checked out. Where you living?
Well, no place. I figured when I got my piece of this action, I'd move to a nicer joint.
I couldn't find you at the hotel. I went to see your girlfriend. What a hangover she had.
Yeah, well, I'll match mine with anybody's.
I took her out and bought her a drink.
Hey, I had to open a new bottle.
Huh?
Well, you drink first. You guys, that might be gasoline. Okay, now, come on. Let's have it.
Hey, Eric, your girl says you did a lot of talking last night.
Did you ever see a silent drunk?
Huh? She says you even told her the cops were looking for you, but you didn't care.
You said you were making a big score today and you'd pick her up and take her away with you.
I'll have to change brands.
Those three crates would make a nice score, wouldn't they?
Oh, now, Al, you don't think he was going to grab the stuff and run?
Ask him.
Now, listen, you ought to know that I wouldn't pull a thing like that.
Oh, after what she's told me, I'm not so sure.
Oh, look, Al, we're pals.
How do you explain what she told me?
Well, it's perfectly logical. I figured on the money I'd be getting from you.
What you'd get from me ain't big enough to blow town on.
Now, look, if you don't want to believe me, we'll call the deal off.
It ain't that easy.
Now, look, don't.
I want to talk about it some more.
Don't, Al. No, I don't feel good, honestly.
You mean you need some air?
Yeah, I need air.
Well, we can take care of that. We'll take you for a little ride in our boat.
We will return in just a minute to tonight's exciting case from the official file of your FBI. But now, listen.
Mailman's here early today, Essie. Guess he's got our check from the Equitable Society.
Every month, right on the dot, those Equitable checks come to members who have paid up their Equitable Independent 60s plan. They're checks that mean financial independence for life after you're 65 years old. And here's Mr. Robert Buckner, who started one of those plans almost 30 years ago. You finished your payments last year, didn't you, Mr. Buckner?
Yep. 1950 was quitting time for me. I resigned from my job, and I'm here to say I've been having a mighty good time ever since.
In other words, Mr. Buckner, you're now enjoying the three freedoms that go with an independent 60s plan. First, freedom from money worries and job worries. Financial independence.
Nobody will ever have to help me to get along, Mr. Keating. My monthly Equitable check takes care of that.
Second, with an Equitable independent 60s plan, you're free to live anywhere you please.
I'm living in a little town down on the Gulf Coast. My wife and I have always dreamed of a spot like that.
Third, freedom to do the things you've always wanted to do.
I like to fool around in my home workshop, turning out old rustic furniture, even pick up a little extra money selling it. You know, Mr. Keating, the best thing that ever happened to me was when my Equitable Society representative proved that you don't have to make a lot of money to afford an independent 60s plan.
That's a fact. You don't have to earn big money to begin an Equitable independent 60s plan. Ask your Equitable representative to explain why you probably have a big head start towards independent 60s because of your Social Security and the life insurance you already own. Often only a small amount of additional insurance is all that's required.
A few dollars a week did it for me.
Friends, why not profit by Mr. Buckner's experience? Phone your Equitable Society representative without delay or send a postcard care of this station to the Equitable Society.
That's EQUITABLE.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. And now back to the FBI file, Old Mother Larceny.
In tonight's FBI file, we have met a woman wholly unfit to bring up children. Naturally, her own moral irresponsibility and emotional immaturity were transferred to her sons. Small wonder they developed into criminals. That may seem unimportant to you, since this type of parent is fortunately rare. However, parental selfishness and neglect are not rare. And it is probably true that a major part of all delinquency can be traced to either parental neglect or indifference. Awareness of this is largely responsible for the development of parent training courses, guidance clinics, and social service organizations which are available nowadays to almost everyone. Parents are urged to take advantage of them. Any parent who has any reason to feel that his children are getting out of hand should take prompt advantage of this expert assistance. Remember, in 9 cases out of 10, it takes a delinquent or indifferent parent to rear a delinquent child. Tonight's FBI file continues later that day at the local FBI field office. Special Agent Taylor has just entered.
Larry, we just missed Eric Martin.
Hmm? Where?
At the Star Hotel. He checked out this morning.
No forwarding address, naturally.
No, and a man was there before me. Questioned everybody trying to find out where Martin went.
Who was he?
Well, I didn't get a name, but I got a description. He was about 6'3", very heavy set, dark hair, and a scar on his left cheek that looked like a knife wound.
The man who slugged those watchmen?
That's what I figure. Police are checking their files now.
Well, I wish I could throw something into the pot.
No word on the binoculars?
The police questioned all suspected fences. There hasn't been a trace of them.
Well, Martin finding out he was wanted, maybe they decided to go under for a while. Huh?
Could be.
Well, if they did, we ought to... Pardon me.
Yeah, sure.
Taylor speaking. Yes, Captain. Oh, when? Where was that? Yes. Yes, of course. Thanks for calling. Well, our suspect must have caught up with Eric Martin. His body was just fished out of the river.
Huh?
Come on, Larry. Let's get over to the morgue.
At the garage.
Did he sell those things?
Nah, we were busy saying goodbye to a friend.
Oh, I'm sure glad you have so many friends.
Yeah, we got one less now.
Who?
Eric. He was going to cheat us.
Oh, Mr. Martin?
Mm-hmm. Me and Zanny went for a boat ride with him. He fell overboard.
Oh, that's too bad. I was fixing lunch for him, too. Well, he wasn't very happy anyway.
Nah.
It's a shame he had to have his accident before he did that business for you. That way, at least, he'd have died rich.
Well, he told me the name of the man who wanted to buy the Binox.
Oh, that was nice.
Yeah, after we eat, I'll get somebody else to go see him.
We can go ourselves. Keep the money in the family.
But, Ma...
Son, the way prices are today, a person's got to try to keep every dollar he steals.
You the men to see the Martin, buddy?
Yes, that's right.
Over here.
Thanks.
That's him.
Yeah, it's Martin, all right.
Mm-hmm. He's a bad head one.
Uh-huh.
Marks on his face, Larry. Looks like he's beaten.
Yeah.
Is the medical report in yet?
Just came down.
Oh, thanks very much. Cause of death, skull fracture. Dead when he hit the water. How about Martin's belongings?
Over on the table.
Thanks very much. There you are.
Well, you didn't have very much.
No.
Auto keys.
Any numbers on the other side?
No.
It'd be tough to trace.
Now, this key's got a number on it. That's all.
Hey, let me take a look at that. I got the same kind of key last month, and I rented a locker at the airport, and one company owns all those lockers. Let's call them, Larry, and see where this key belongs. There's another bank of lockers, Larry. 8, 3, 7...
There it is.
Yeah. Got it?
There's a bag, Jim.
Open it, will you?
Right. One change and a bottle opener.
This porter's tag on the handle has number 17 on it. Let's try and find him. Larry, I located number 17.
Do you remember Martin?
Yeah, he was here this morning.
With anyone?
No, alone. Come on.
Where are we going?
Porter saw Martin going out that door. If he took a cab, the starter might know where he went. Larry, we're closing in.
What did you find?
The starter remembers Martin taking a cab.
Where to?
He doesn't know, but this morning's drivers have cashed in, so let's hit the cab garage and start checking trip records.
Can you leave the truck here?
After 5 o'clock, you can park any place.
You go ahead, Ma. We'll wait here.
All right.
Eric said the man's name was Wilson.
Mr. Wilson, I remember.
Good luck, Ma.
Can I help you?
You're Mr. Wilson?
Yes, ma'am.
I have binoculars here in this box. How much will you give me?
Well, I'll have to see them first.
Go ahead, open it.
These are quite good.
How much?
$20.
Oh, Mr. Wilson, they're worth more.
Not to me.
Well, all right. One more?
How many more?
9 dozen.
I couldn't buy that many without knowing where you got them.
Well, my husband, he has a trucking business. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. Right now, it's bad. One of his customers, he can't pay the bill. He told my husband to keep the goods.
And these binoculars are the goods?
Yeah.
Well, where are the others?
In the truck outside. Come on, I'll show you.
I can't leave the store right now, but perhaps you wouldn't mind showing them to these gentlemen.
Oh, you want to see the glasses?
Yes, ma'am.
Are you the owners?
No, Mrs. Berrien.
Well, who told you my name?
We're special agents of the FBI. We just arrested your sons outside. Come on, we can all ride down to headquarters together.
Mrs. Berrien and her two sons, Albert and Daniel, were turned over to local authorities. They were tried and convicted in a state court on a charge of murder. In checking the cab records, Special Agents Taylor and Dodge found that one trip made at the time Eric Martin left the railroad station had been from the terminal to Wilson's pawn shop. Since that was a likely place to dispose of binoculars, they waited in the hope someone would appear and try to consummate the sale. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here is a vital message on our nation's internal security from J. Edgar Hoover, director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Mr. Hoover's message is, and I quote, "The term subversive activities applies to activities on the part of any individual or organization which is intended to forcibly overthrow the American government or to give aid to its enemies. Your FBI has been entrusted with the duty of coordinating the investigation of subversive activity on a national basis. All law enforcement agencies, patriotic organizations, and loyal citizens are requested to report information relating to subversive activities to the FBI immediately. This is an important contribution that the private citizen can make to the nation's security program." Next week, we will dramatize another case from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Its subject, homicide. Its title, The Night Rider.
The incidents used in tonight's Equitable Life Assurance Society's broadcast are adapted from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. However, all names used are fictitious, and any similarity thereof to the names of places or persons, living or dead, is accidental. Tonight, the music was composed and conducted by Frederick Steiner. The author was Jerry D. Lewis. Your narrator was William Woodson, and Special Agent Taylor was played by Stacey Harris. Others in the cast were Tony Barrett, Ted DeCorsia, Charles Maxwell, John Mitchum, Jeanette Nolan, Victor Rodman, and John Sheehan. This Is Your FBI is a Jerry Devine production. This is Larry Keating speaking for the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community, and inviting you to tune in again next week at this same time when the Equitable Life Assurance Society will bring you another thrilling transcribed story from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The Night Rider on This Is Your FBI. Stay tuned for the adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. There's fun for the whole family when Ozzie and Harriet come your way next. This program came to you from Hollywood.
This Is Your FBI, an ABC episode from May 25th, 1951, on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levenier, for an hour of detective drama, and now on to America's favorite insurance investigator, yours truly, Johnny Dollar. The CBS episode called The Hapless Ham Matter, starring Bob Bailey, was first heard on January 3rd, 1960.
Johnny Dollar.
Dollar, the investigator?
That's right, insurance investigator.
Then you're the man I want, the man I need, immediately.
Well, it just happens I'm late for an appointment, Mr., what did you say your name is?
I didn't, but it's Lynch, Walter E. Lynch. And you must come out here right away, Mr. Dollar. Protect me.
Protect you?
Yes. I live over here in Manchester.
Manchester, Connecticut?
Yes, that's right. My address is 13421 Peachtree Lane.
13421 Peachtree.
Now, can you come out here right away?
Well, I told you I have an appointment to keep.
And then I hope it's a brief one. You'll come here as soon as you're through with it?
Well, that depends, Mr. Lynch. What seems to be the trouble?
Well, I thought I made it clear to you, Dollar. My life has been threatened.
Well, isn't that something for the police to handle?
Police?
After all, unless there's insurance involved.
Why, of course there is. My own.
Oh, what company, Mr. Lynch?
Company?
Yeah, that's right. Well?
Now, what is the matter with you? What difference does it make? If my life is in danger, I need your protection.
Okay. Who made this threat against your life, and why?
Oh, good heavens, man, do I have to go into that sort of detail on the telephone?
Well, unless I know what this is all about, and, look, you didn't answer my question, Mr. Lynch. Have you told the police about this?
Do you think I'd call on you if I had?
But if your life has been threatened, the
and
thing...
And I tell you it has. What is the matter with you?
All right, then. Call in the police.
Now, you listen to me, Dollar.
Meantime, if I find any legitimate reason why I should make an investigation...
Don't you understand? I'm not asking for investigation. I'm asking for protection.
And I tell you, the people
but
for you to
call... you have my name, you have my address. Now, you get on over here.
But don't you see? I can't
just... I waiting for you.
Mr. Lynch. Okay, mister, go ahead and wait. Of all the crackpots... I wonder, though. Yeah?
Johnny?
Yeah, that's right.
Pat McCracken, Johnny, Universal Adjuster.
Oh, say, Pat, will you find out for me what company, if any, holds a policy on a Walter E. Lynch over in Manchester?
Sure, Johnny. But listen, I thought you were going to be here in my office at 10 o'clock sharp.
Pat, I'm sorry, but this
I need your signature on a deposition for that arson murder you covered last week.
I know.
And I've got to have it right away. See, one of our men will take it with him out to the coast on the 10:30 plane. And, Johnny, it's 8 minutes after right now.
Yeah, I see it is. Pat, I'll be there in 3 minutes flat.
Okay.
Meantime, look up that Walter Lynch for me, will you?
Okay. Just get on over here.
Right.
CBS Radio brings you Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
And now, Act One of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Eastern Trust and Insurance Company, Home Office, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the hapless ham matter. Expense account, item one, $1.20 plus another dollar for the cab driver who got me from my apartment to Universal Adjustment Bureau in record time. I barged in on Pat McCracken without being announced, put my John Hancock on the deposition, after which he witnessed my signature.
All right, there we are. Now, here you are, Miss Delsig. Give these to Mr. Peterson and tell him happy plane trip.
Yes, sir, right away.
Oh, and see if Bartell has found any of that Lynch information I asked him about.
He's been a lynching, Mr. McCracken?
No. Just do as I say. Now, go ahead.
But I thought I heard you... Yes, sir.
Hey, what is the worry on this man Lynch, Johnny?
Well, Patty sounded like a crackpot. He called me on the phone just before you did, said his life is being threatened.
Oh, another one of those things, huh?
Yeah.
Who was threatening him?
Oh, I don't know. He was, he was a bit evasive about it, same as he was about naming his insurance company.
Well, I know. I never heard of him. What did you tell him?
I told him to call the police, that unless there was some insurance angle that required investigation, you know.
Right. Exactly right. Although, of course, if Bartell does find something on him, if he is a client of one of the companies...
It's still a police matter. Why call on me to play bodyguard?
Well, you know, Johnny, if you would have your telephone number unlisted, you'd save yourself a lot of these nuisance calls.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, yes?
Here's a photostat of the Lynch policy Mr. Martell said you asked him for.
Oh, then there is one. Thank you.
And I thought you were talking about some kind of a lynching somewhere, Mr. McCracken. Isn't that fun?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Miss Delsey. That'll be all.
Oh, I was only... Yes, sir.
Now, let's see, Johnny. Walter E. Lynch. Policy issued 1954, Eastern Trust and Insurance. Face value is...
Yeah, I see. 50,000 smackers.
That's a lot of money.
Let's see the name of the beneficiary.
Oh. A nephew. Fred Lynch, New York City address. I wonder, Johnny.
So do I. How well Freddie and his uncle get along.
Named him as beneficiary?
5 or 6 years ago, things can change, Pat.
There's one way to find out.
And with $50,000 to be paid out if anything does happen to
yes,
him.
Yes. Go ahead, Johnny. Go ahead and pay Mr. Walter Lynch a little visit.
At company expense?
Well, now,
Well?
Oh, sure, why not? I'll notify Eastern that we've assigned you to this, but that you'll send your expense account directly to them. Okay?
Okay. I was only about 13 miles from my place to Manchester, and I used my own car, but I saw no reason for not using the old expense account, so item two was $4.60 for a tank full of gas. The address Mr. Lynch had given me turned out to be in a rather nice residential section. The house was a small but attractive Cape Cod affair, surrounded by stately elm trees. And then I saw them in the shade of the elms at the front of the place. A couple of police cars.
Just a minute there, mister.
Huh? Oh, hi, officer.
Who are you and what do you want around here?
Oh, my name is Dollar, Sergeant Johnny Dollar, insurance investigator. I came here to see
insurance
Mr. Lynch.
Insurance investigator, huh? Any credentials? Better let me see him.
Oh, sure, here, okay. Here you are. Hey, what's happening around here?
Okay, Dollar. You boys act pretty fast, don't you?
What do you mean? Is Mr. Lynch in some kind of trouble?
I'd call it worse than trouble, Dollar. He's dead.
He's what?
That's right, murdered.
Well, then I'd better get inside there and see what's what.
Yeah, Dollar. Sure, maybe you better.
Inside the Lynch Hall, the police medico in my own eyes confirmed what Sergeant Beakley had told me outside. Walter E. Lynch was dead, all right. And there was no question about his having been murdered.
As you can see, Mr. Dollar, the knife, obviously a long, very sharp one, plunged into his body here. Directly back of the heart.
Yeah, Doctor, I see.
No doubt penetrated that organ. Death must have been virtually instantaneous. Yes.
Any sign of the murder weapon?
We haven't found any sign of it here in the house, Dollar. Conroy's out back looking for it. And for any footprints that might give us a clue.
That little rain we had last night ought to help in the footprints department.
Only it doesn't. Now, whoever did this must have come right in the front door. Hi, Dollar.
Hi, Conroy.
Sergeant, you want me to see what's holding up the boys from the lab?
Yeah, I'll give them a call.
Right, you are.
Meantime, Dollar, if you have any ideas...
No, wait a minute. Too late, I guess.
What?
Were any fingerprints on that telephone? Conroy's probably covered him up.
Conroy. Probably covered up. Anyway.
Huh?
Well, it wasn't the killer who called us about this. It was the old character who lives next door, a man named Halsey. Right now, he's back home in his rocking chair at the corner window, muttering to himself, trying to recover from the shock. Maybe when he does recover, he'll be able to give us some help.
How did he find out about this?
Seems he came over here to talk to Mr. Lynch about his nephew.
Fred Lynch.
Nobody answered his knock. The front door was wide open, so he walked in here and found this. So he picked up the phone and... You know about Fred Lynch?
I know he's beneficiary of his uncle's insurance.
Another good motive gone to waste.
What do you mean?
You don't know about a couple 3 years ago when Freddie's mother died, left him a pile of money... Only made the mistake of leaving it in charge of this one, this stiff we've got lying here.
What happened?
Well, this old crook finagled that young kid out of every cent of it. So that by the time Fred was 25, entitled to it, that was about 6 months ago, why, Dollar, Freddie ended up with nothing.
His own nephew.
That surprise you, Dollar? It's because you don't live here in Manchester. Don't know anything about the Lynch family, what's left of them, which is only Freddie now.
Well, what's that supposed to mean?
Not one of the Lynch tribe was any good. Ask me, the town will be glad to see this one out of the way.
Oh, I get it.
Oh, what'd they say, Conroy? Somebody on the way over?
Harker will be over as soon as he clears up a hit and run over on the east side.
Okay. Well, I guess there's nothing more we can do. Go see who it is.
Yes, sir.
You about finished, Doc?
Sergeant, this knife wound puzzles me greatly. Yes.
What do you mean, Doc?
Very unusual instrument. Very long, thin... With a two-edged blade. Yeah, both edges very sharp.
That's so?
Yeah. Very unusual.
Sergeant, you said a neighbor, Mr. Halsey, found him here?
Yeah. Did somebody speak my name?
Here's the man who was knocking on the door.
Oh, Mr. Halsey, come in.
I don't know that I want to, Sergeant, with that poor man laying there dead.
Mr. Halsey, this is Johnny Dollar, insurance investigator.
Eh? Insurance investigator?
Yeah, I understand you came over here to talk with Mr. Lynch about his nephew, Mr. Halsey.
Freddie, why that? That worthless young wastrel, that...
Why do you say that?
Well, because he never did a day of honest work in his life. The theater, that's all he cares about.
Theater?
In New York City, that pit of iniquity spends all his time with sinful people. Actors, chorus girls, and the like.
I take it you don't have much use for people in show business.
Scum of the earth. That's what they are. That's all they are.
Yeah,
and
well,
he's one of them.
Now, Mr. Halsey,
and
if you...
And when I saw him here this morning...
What? He was here?
No doubt come to beg some money from his uncle.
Why didn't you tell me that, Mr. Halsey?
Of course his uncle cut him off from the money his mother left him. Wouldn't you have done the same?
Mr. Halsey, listen,
eh?
Would you?
Yes, well, wouldn't you?
Look here now.
He is in that sinful city down there.
Wait a minute. You say that Freddie was here this morning?
Yes, of course he was.
When?
That's why I finally made up my mind to come over here and talk to Walter about him.
What time was he here?
Well, from 9:30 to a few minutes of 10.
Doc, have you been able to fix the time of death?
Very close, Sergeant, yes. By the body temperature.
What time would you say, Doctor?
About 10 o'clock.
Mr. Halsey, are you sure it was a few minutes of 10 when Freddie left here?
Well, of course I am.
How sure?
I was sitting by the window listening to my radio like I always do.
Thought you didn't like anything about show business.
Radio is different.
Oh, thanks.
Freddie left this house just before the WDRC announcer gave the time as 10 a.m., and radio time is accurate time.
I see what you meant, Sergeant, about a motive going to waste where Freddie was concerned.
What are you talking about, Dollar? The doc says death was about 10 a.m.
I know.
So?
And, Mr. Halsey, you're sure that Freddie didn't come back here after 10?
What's the difference?
Of course I am. These eyes of mine may be pretty old, but they never miss anything.
Well,
what's the difference, Johnny? Freddie's the one that killed him. Lord knows he's the one logical suspect.
No, Sergeant.
Doc says approximately 10. So, all right, it was a few minutes of before Freddie left here. So Freddie killed him. Now, look, everything ties up. Yeah, and the kind of a knot that's going to hang that boy.
No, Sergeant, I wish it was that easy.
Oh, of course it is. Motive, opportunity, everything. It all spells Freddie Lynch.
No.
Conroy, put a tracer on him.
Right, Sergeant.
Sergeant, I'm afraid you're wrong.
How can I be?
That is, if Mr. Halsey is sure of his times.
Of course I am. On the radio.
Okay, Dollar, why?
Because Walter E. Lynch was still alive after 10 o'clock.
What are you talking about? How do you know?
Because he'd called me on the phone. Because I myself was talking to him at exactly 8 minutes after 10.
Oh. We'll continue with Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in exactly 1 minute.
Here's Hollywood star Mona Freeman.
Who feels like acting with a miserable cold? I relieve cold distress the fast way with four-way cold tablets.
Yes, tests of all the leading cold tablets proved four-way fastest acting. Amazing four-way starts in minutes to relieve muscular pains and headache, reduce fever, calm upset stomach, also overcomes irregularity.
When a cold strikes, do what I do. Take four-way cold tablets. It's the fast way to relieve nasty cold distress and feel better quickly.
Four-way, only 29 cents.
Now, here's a word about another fine product of Grove Laboratories. Had dandruff for years? Now get rid of it in 3 minutes with Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo. 3 minutes with Fitch regularly is guaranteed to keep unsightly dandruff away forever. Apply Fitch before wetting hair. Rub in 1 minute. Add water, lather 1 minute. Then rinse 1 minute. Every trace of dandruff goes down the drain. 3 minutes with Fitch, embarrassing dandruff's gone. Fitch can also leave hair up to 35% brighter. Get Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo today. And now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Hapless Ham Matter.
No question about it. I was the perfect alibi for Freddie Lynch. Freddie had left his uncle's house a few minutes before 10. I had talked with his uncle at 8 minutes after 10. Yeah, and when the police checked up, they learned that Freddie had taken a bus to New York at 10:15. On foot. And he was on foot. Old man Halsey had seen that. He had to leave the house before 10 to make that bus.
I told you, young man, these eyes of mine may be old, but they never miss a thing. He was on foot, all right, and he left this house before 10 o'clock, and he didn't come back.
But now wait. Wait a minute. If someone else came in here to commit the murder after Freddie left, why hadn't old man Halsey seen that person?
You're right, Dollar. Nobody else came here, so it must have been Freddie killed his uncle.
All right, now look, Sergeant.
Only how could he? Because if you talked to Mr. Lynch at 8 minutes after, and Freddie was on his way to the bus station, and he had
wait,
to be...
Wait,
then
Sergeant.
It's impossible. Dollar, this really bugs me.
All right, listen, the murder weapon.
Very unusual.
I know, Doc, you told me.
It must have been something I'd never seen before.
I wouldn't be too sure about that, unless you feel the same way Mr. Halsey does about show business.
What?
Terrible. Sinful, iniquitous, immoral.
Yeah, maybe you're right on this one.
What are you getting at, Doc?
I'm getting out. Was that an express, that bus that Freddie took to New York?
No, it was a local. But I don't see
what... luck, in my own car, I can beat him down there. Do you know where he lives, Mr. Halsey?
I certainly do.
All right, where?
At 1231 West 43rd Street.
Good. I'll see you later.
Now, Dollar...
Oh, Sergeant, maybe you can fix any tickets for speeding I pick up along the way. Somehow, just lucky, I guess, I managed to reach the address in New York without getting pinched. A $10 bill of the superintendent, that's item three, got me into the rooms of Freddie Lynch. The walls were plastered with theatrical programs and playbills, most of them from summer playhouses, off-Broadway shows. In a closet, I found some costumes he'd used in various productions. In one corner was a battered shield with a broken spear beside it. Some heavy oriental belts and jewelry. A long robe of an Arabian desert rider with a sort of turban to go with it. Yeah, everything fitted in very nice. Hey, yeah, wide open, Freddie, wide open, just the way you left it. Come in, kid.
I beg your pardon?
Kind of careless, but it's all right, it's okay.
Hey, who are you?
You kidding? Jerry Allen, the agent, you know.
Agent?
Yeah, where you been, Freddie? When you didn't answer the letter in the telegram I sent you, where you been, huh, kid?
Oh, you're a theatrical agent?
What else? Listen, look, hey, kid, get this. I got a part for you, great part, a great one, a good salary, too. Of course, you got to let me represent you in the deal, but all I want's the usual 10%. Well, how about it, huh, kid?
Jerry Allen, you say?
Yeah, sure, that's right. Oh, we've never been introduced, but I caught you in half a dozen things, and you're good boy, good, real good.
Well, I like to think so.
Sure, sure you are. And being it's my business, I got to keep adding to my stable of actors, see what I mean? So if you want this part, well...
I don't think so,
what?
Mr. Allen.
What are you talking about?
Well, I'm thinking of giving up the theater.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Wait a minute, kid. You've fallen heir to a fortune or something?
Why do you say that?
Huh? Of course, if you don't want the part.
Perhaps I'd better do another play or two.
Good, good. And you'll let me represent you? Well, Freddie?
Oh, why not? Well, if the part is good.
Is the part good? It's great, kid. It's great. And if this thing doesn't hit Broadway the first time out... Hey, listen. Listen, it's a new play written by Johnstone. You get that?
Johnstone? I'm afraid I don't recall ever...
Oh, sure you've heard of him. Why, man, he's had more hits. Oh, and listen, Freddie. Listen to this part.
All right. I'm listening.
Okay, starts out a young man just about your age. Second act is 20 years later. Hey, you think you can do it?
Why... of course, my good man.
Good, good. And the third act, well, now that part may be a little tough. You got to kind of make like you're about 60.
Here, there's no problem at all, Mr. Allen. No problem at all.
Oh, only it's a shaky old man, like he's scared to death all the time.
All right, listen. All fear has clutched me by the throat. The overpowering terror, willing up.
Oh, hey, that's great, that's great. Come on, keep it up, Freddy boy, keep it up.
Well, see, of course, if I had a script, I...
Scared, remember? Scared. Say something like, you must come here right away to protect me.
You must come here right away to protect me.
Oh, that's great, 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 great. Now, say my life is in danger. I've been threatened, Mr. Dollar.
My very life is in... What? What? Dollar?
That's right. Johnny Dollar.
Why, this was all a trick.
Yeah, and you fell for it like a ton of bricks. The same voice you faked over the telephone to sound like your uncle.
Well, now listen.
Killed him, left his hall knowing that nosy old neighbor would swear as to when you left. Then ran to the bus depot and called me up with that phony voice to make an airtight alibi. To make me ready to swear your uncle was still alive after you left him there dead.
But, Dollar, listen. See, I'm his only kin. I'll be coming into a lot of money. His insurance and whatever money or property there is.
Oh, why don't you drop dead?
I see. But you see this.
So that's what you did it with.
Yeah, that's right.
Arabian, isn't it?
I stand back.
Long, thin blade with a double edge. From one of your costume plays.
I stand back, I say.
Sure, sure. I don't need to be close to you to use this.
Whoa! My hand. You broken my hand.
Funny. I didn't think I was that good a shot. So now I'll have to make another deposition for the sake of another trial. And I'm sure that hamming it up in court won't keep Freddy from playing out the rest of his life in front of a captive audience. Expense account total, including a flock of incidentals, well, let's call it $100. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Now, here's a word from our star about the case he'll investigate on next week's program.
Thanks, Daniel. It's called the Unholy Two Matter and involves a pair of characters who fit that description perfectly. One of them a killer. And if you're at all curious about what to do when you've got the situation well in hand and then suddenly a gun is shoved into the middle of your back, well, join us, won't you? Right here on your favorite station at the usual time on Sunday. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Bob Bailey originates in Hollywood and is written, produced, and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Chet Stratton, Florence Dobkin, Sam Edwards, Herb Ellis, Ralph Moody, and Junius Matthews. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Dan Coverley speaking.
Next, Ray Bradbury's science fiction classic, Zero Hour, as suspense follows on the CBS Radio Network.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, a CBS broadcast with one of the more popular voices to portray the character, Bob Bailey. That episode from January 3rd, 1960. And our cases are closed for this hour of detective drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.